Good morning. Yeah. This sermon series that we've been doing, we're about to continue on in Meant for Good. And I know it's not Father's Day, but the title of this today is called Sad to be a Dad. We're going to be in Genesis 42, the last half of it, and the first part of 43. But one of the things that I want you to know is that sometimes I'm mad at being dad. Yeah. You know, when my kids were younger and they were disobedient, and I don't mean just disobedient, I mean that defiant, rebellious disobedience, that ticked me off. I've also been pretty mad at being dad when, not when my kids kind of got in trouble at school or got in a riff with one of their friends or their peers. It was when another adult was upset with me for some reason and took it out on my kids. That got me mad. But rarely was I mad at being dad. Those kind of things were few and far between. Sometimes, though, it is rad to be a dad. Yeah. It's pretty cool. You know, I've been to the ball game, and maybe for you it was not the ball game, but it was at their concert or at another event. And the people around are talking about your child. They don't know who you are, so they don't know it's your child. And you get to just listen in, and it's pretty cool sometimes. This next was not my child, but if it had been my child, I would have been pretty rad at that moment. The other day, I went over to Belmar School where my granddaughter was finishing out her fifth grade year, and they have their field day track meet that last week. And it was the third through fifth graders were out there. And they were doing all their races, and then they got down and they would shorten them up a little bit, and they come down to one of the shorter races, and they all lined up again. And then, you know, when you're out at these things, you got the parents and you got grandparents out there, and you've got some aunts and uncles and all that. They're all cheering on their kid when it come time, and some of their friends are cheering them on in their grade. Well, all of a sudden, it started chanting, and I started hearing, "Aaron, Aaron." And it wasn't just one of the grades, it was the third graders, the fourth graders, and the fifth graders, all of them sitting under their tent. Aaron, Aaron. And I remember thinking, and this was my thoughts. Okay, which one of those kids over there is the popular one? Because in my head, you know, there's that one kid, everybody knows who they are, they're a good kid, everybody seems to like them. I was kind of getting defensive for all the other kids that didn't have everybody chanting their name almost. And I was looking at those kids and thinking, okay, which one is it going to be? And I'm talking to Anna. Anna, my daughter, sitting next to me or standing next to me, and I'm trying to guess, is it that one or that one? I bet it's one of those two. And the race starts. And the leaders all take off. And those kids all are still chanting, Aaron, Aaron, Aaron. And as the leaders go on, I realize people aren't looking at the leaders, except for the parents. All the kids and everybody else are still chanting Aaron, and I see who Aaron is. Aaron is still at the back and making his way, and whether he has special needs or he's got some sort of infirmity, I don't know, because I don't know this Aaron. But those kids cheered him on, cheered his name, and chanted it all the way, taking him to the finish line. And when he got across, Ann and I couldn't even look at each other. We were trying to keep those lumps in our throat from being too big and the tear that was coming down, and we just wouldn't even look at each other. And I thought, if I had been dad at that moment, I would have thought, this is a pretty cool moment. You know, sometimes it is rad to be dad. Sometimes it's bad to be dad. If you're the man that got a call and says, hey, you're the father, and you're the kind of guy that is the player that doesn't care about any of that, and you're only convinced is to convince her to kill it, or you have no interest in being a dad, that's when it's bad to be a dad. But I have to tell you, most of the time, I am truly glad to be dad. I love being dad. I wanted to be dad. I wanted to be married and dad early in life. I start saying at a young age, I'm like, no, I wasn't trying to be dad at 13. But I'm just saying, I wanted to be a dad. Ended up being a dad of four girls. I didn't know it was going to be that way, but that's how it was. And yeah, and being a dad of four girls who are like best friends, not only when they were younger, actually some of them, they are closer now that they're adults, all of them. And I know that doesn't happen often, but they love being together. In fact, when one of them comes back home, all four of them end at my house. And I mean sleeping there and staying there for days. But I'm still... But I'm glad to be a dad because they go home. But watching your teen, the teen who didn't want to be around the family when they were in high school, now is the first one to be at all family events and loves to do so. I am glad to be a dad. But I realize that in all of these emotions, sometimes it is sad to be dad. Watching my children hurt from cutting off her ring finger, the left hand, or at least the end of it, that hurt. Broken relationships that some of them have had to go through, and walking with them. And even listening to songs that remind you of some of the difficulties that they went through. That happened to me this week. I was just listening to Pandora as I was working on something at the house, and on came the song that I heard years ago when one of my daughters was going through a difficult time, and it reminded me of that, and that song once again reminded me, and I'm got tears being reminded again. It is sad to be a dad. Even when you're glad, now you get, it goes back and reminds you. Today in our story, as we continue on the story of Joseph, Joseph is just a side character. He's indirectly involved today because really the main character that shows up is Jacob. And we're going to see Jacob's sadness at being dad. So if you got your Bibles, chapter 42. We start in verse 29 today, and Jada, once again in our flannel graph video you saw, has read it for us. And I'm not going to reread all of it, but the 29 through 35 area is when they come back and they rehearse what just happened in the first part of the chapter when they were in Egypt. If you remember, Joseph is now second in command. There was a famine seven good years. Now they're in the middle of famine. Jacob sends the 10 oldest boys to Egypt to go buy some grain. And when they go, they end up in front of Joseph. They don't realize it, but Joseph recognizes them. And he kind of plays with their minds a little bit. When all is said and done, he keeps Simeon in prison and tells the others, you got to bring that little brother of yours back. Otherwise, you won't see this brother anymore, and I'm not going to let the rest of you live if you come back and don't bring him. So they come back, and they rehearse all of this to Dad. And then they open up their sacks to find that Joseph had sent everything back with them. And it tells us that they were dismayed at the end of 35. And as we pick up 36, we're going to start to see the self-pity of Jacob. At least I'm calling it the self-pity because he makes three different statements. Verse 36, he says this, "You have bereaved me of my children." He's talking to the oldest boys. "Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And now you want to take Benjamin? All these things are against me." You ever been there when you just feel like everything's against you? Somebody's got it out for you. God's got it out for you. The golf gods got it out for you. Whatever the situation is, nothing's going right in your world and you are already going into self-pity mode. It's not the first one because Reuben speaks up and says, he makes a promise, says, hey, I'll take Joseph, I'll do this. And Jacob comes back at the end of that and says, you know what, if Benjamin was to go and some harm would happen to him, then he said, you're going to take my gray hairs down to the grave. And then Judah speaks up and says, Dad, we can't go back. We got to take little brother with us. And chapter 43, verse 6, once again, Jacob comes back and he says, why do you treat me so badly by telling me these things? What are you doing to me? Why do you keep doing this? One of the things I realized in all of this is Jacob is assuming a lot of things. He says, Joseph is no more. Well, it's only fitting that he thinks that because that's what he's been told the whole time, that your son was killed by wild animals. He says, Simeon is no more. Well, Simeon is sitting in a prison there in Egypt, but he knows he's there, but apparently he doesn't have any intentions of going back and getting him. And he says, and he assumes, if Benjamin goes, I won't get to see him anymore either. There's a lot of assumptions there, and I realized none of them come true. We see the rest of the story. We know what lays ahead. We know that Joseph is there, and Joseph is more. He's not no more. He is there. We know that Simeon will be released, and we know that nothing happens to Benjamin. But Jacob has already played the pity part, and everything is against him, making those assumptions. And do we not do that with God at times? We can't see the whole story. We've already created the negative effects and the outcomes. And that's what Jacob's doing here. And then we see Jacob's favoritism once again exposed. After Reuben spoke up in verse 38, Jacob says, my son's not going to go down with you. He says, because his brother is dead, meaning Joseph, and he alone is left. Can you imagine being Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Judah, Levi, any of the other brothers? And Dad says, and my only son is left. And you're thinking, well, what about us? Now, some of you have probably felt that way when parents treated this one a little bit more favorite. Now, I don't know what that's like because I was the favorite in my family, but some of you probably do. Jacob's favoritism gets exposed here. Once again, his favorite wife, Rachel, her kids became his favorites. And it was obvious in the way he interacted and the way he treated them. Favoritism. Now, I realize as parents, we treat our kids differently at different times. We might say we love them all the same, and we do. We love them, but we love them differently too. We love them differently because they are different and they're unique, and we do some things differently with this kid that we might do different than that, but we love them. But there are times where one kid, and in some places where overwhelmingly becomes the favorite to the extent of they're not showing much love for the others. And in this situation, it seems to show itself. Simeon doesn't realize this, but after he sat there in jail for a while, realizing, you know what, they haven't come back to get me. I guess the others were the favorite. Because they don't go back until they get hungry again. And Judah says, you know what, we could have gone twice now, Dad. Simeon left to rot there. Then big brothers step into the scene. Two of the big brothers, the firstborn and the fourthborn, step up and try to talk Dad into this. First, Reuben speaks up again. And we talked about that last week. Reuben does seem to speak up a lot, which is good for the firstborn. He just hasn't always stepped up. And he says, Dad, if I don't bring Benjamin back, you can take my two sons and kill them. I'm like, what? We don't understand that in our culture. And actually, I don't understand it in that culture. But you would give your two sons, if you don't bring brother back, for grandpa to kill them. And I'm thinking, what grandpa would kill his two grandkids for revenge? Then I realized Herod's did, Caesar's did, a lot of people in power, they often did that. But a good parent, a good grandparent wouldn't do that. And Jacob doesn't respond to Reuben very well. I think some of it has to do with some of the Reuben's past and what he's done, and he doesn't necessarily trust him too much. But then Judah speaks up. And Judah says, Dad, you remember, we can't go back. We cannot go back to Egypt unless we take Benjamin with us. He won't allow us to live if we don't bring him back. And he'll kill Simeon if we do. And then Judah promises that you can put the blame on me if I don't bring him back. And for whatever reason, Jacob agrees now. And I don't know why. Why not Reuben and why Judah? I wonder, this is just a wondering, Judah has lost his two firstborn sons at this point. Could it be that Judah understands what Jacob's going through a little bit more? I don't know. But for whatever reason, Jacob agrees and now is willing to send Benjamin along. And I realize that in the midst of all of this, Jacob's faith shows up even in his heartache. For see, when we get down to verse 11, Jacob then says, now that he's agreed, he says, okay, we're going to send some of the best of what we got. We're going to send some pistachios, nuts, and almonds. Now, I don't know about you, but that would not be a great gift for me. I mean, some of you know, I'm just not into nuts and almonds, pistachios. Those, yeah. When you make chocolate chip cookies for me, don't put that kind of stuff in them. Yeah. But for whatever reason, they loved them, and it was the best of the produce that they had, and sends it along, and then he sends twice the money back. Take the money that he sent back that we sent the first time, and then take that same amount again. And then he says this. He sends him on this with this prayer of blessing. May God Almighty grant you compassion in the sight of the man, verse 14, so that he will release to you your other brother and Benjamin. Jacob sends him along with this prayer of blessing. Interesting that as he sends him along and asking God to grant the compassion, that it is already in the works before Jacob ever prays it. God has already been working things out for quite a while, and Joseph already knows what he's going to do, at least once his brothers get there. The reunion is going to take place in a few chapters. God is already in the works. And then Jacob says this, if I am bereaved of my children, then I am bereaved. Jacob finally puts his worries into the care of the Almighty. A place where it should have been already. A place that we ought to put our cares and worries, but as parents, sometimes it is hard. We as parents, we have been in charge of these kids as we've brought them up, and it's not always easy to put them into the care of somebody else, even when that's God, because we think we can do it. But that's Jacob's sadness. And I got to thinking, you know what? We too, as parents, have many difficulties. Sometimes there's difficult decisions that have to be made. Many of you have had to make those difficult decisions, sometimes about jobs. Where are you going to take this job? Or do you take this promotion that's going to maybe move you away from the home that you've known for a long time and pull kids out of school? Or do you take the raise and the new position, but it's going to mean that you're going to be away from home a whole lot more? Do you have two incomes, or can we live on the one and have somebody stay home with the kids when they're little? What school are we going to send them to? Which school do we like? Do we go public or private, or do we go home? Or one of the biggest decisions that we seem to have trouble with a lot is, what's for supper tonight? Yeah. Yeah. Some of you know that is a difficult decision. But what about the emotional roller coasters that we have as parents? How is it that a child, in the span of 10 minutes, can go through the broad range of emotions in 10 minutes or less, and have the power to take you through those emotions too? I don't know how they do it, but they can have you mad and they can have you in tears, not because you're mad, but because now the cute thing they did all inside of 10 minutes. There's the highs of childbirth when they come into your world and the tears that go with it. The laughter around the table. Leanne just talking about around the table with your family. The laughter and the stories. But then there's the fears. The fears of those unknown illnesses that show up with your child. Or the fears of that post means they have not come home yet, after curfew, and you're still wondering where they are, and they haven't been driving very long, and you're wondering, are they still alive? We quickly go to those places. Or the worries of the adult children, and wondering where they are, and you haven't spoken to them, and you don't know where they live. How about the panic of paint around their mouth as they got into the styrofoam cup that is your touch-up paint around the corners? And the panic wondering how much did they drink that sends you to the emergency room as fast as you can get there, wondering what kind of poison control that the situation we're under. And you go from that fear and panic to anger as the nurses try to give Ipecac syrup to make them throw up, and they don't throw up. They just scream and cry, and the nurses are holding them there, and you can't do anything about it. And the more they scream, the angrier you get because you don't know what to do. And she still doesn't throw up, so they give her more. And she's got snot coming down and tears full everywhere. And everybody in the emergency room can hear her. And you don't know what to do still. And she finally throws up all of it. And you're finally relieved when the doctor comes in and says, yep, she didn't swallow any of the paint. And you are so thankful. And then you get mad again when he says, and if she had, it wouldn't have hurt her anyway. No. No. The emotions we go through. Or how about the embarrassment that as parents we sometimes go through when our child does something and we sit and wonder, how's it going to look on me? What do those other people think of me when my child is having that tantrum? What do they think of me when all the parents at school see what my child has done out there in front of everybody? What do they think of me when my adult child is still acting in this way? One of the other difficulties is dealing with loss. Watching our kids go out on their own when they leave the house, watching them go off to college, and as some have experienced, watching them go off to war. E.B. White said it best, I think, when he said, the time not to become a father is 18 years before a world war. Sometimes that loss is not our children just kind of going away, it's when they go away for good in death. We all know our children aren't supposed to die before us. That's not normal. That's not natural. But yet it happens. Tragedy strikes. And people are faced dealing with the loss of a child. The emotional roller coasters that parents go through. Do you know the divorce rate is far higher for marriages that have the loss of a child. I'm so thankful that my mom and dad didn't. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. And aren't you glad? Thank you. You responded appropriately. What about this difficulty dealing with the poor decisions and choices that your kids make? Drugs is an ever-increasing problem in our world, and it's been around for a little while. I've watched too many grandparents raising their grandchildren due to drugs. Drug is an addictive thing, and many of those children and our adult children who are still hooked in those things, who continually think they can handle it, and the addiction handles them. Or the poor choices of some of the lifestyle decisions that your child makes. Goes against what you've taught them, goes against what they know to be right. The choice to walk away from God, to walk away from the very things that you've taught them. My grandmother used to say this, and I never heard her say it, but I heard my mom say this all the time. She would tell me what grandma would say to her is, when your kids are little, they step on your toes. And when your kids are big, they step on your hearts. Some of you know that all too well. So what do we do? How do we handle these times of sadness and difficult situations that come in our lives? Well, maybe we do like Jimmy's dad did, and like Jacob did. Jimmy's dad wrote a letter. It starts out this way: "My dear Jim boy, soon after you read this letter, you will be on your way to the worst sort of danger." Now, Jimmy grew up in Indiana, Pennsylvania. His dad owned a hardware store, and when he wasn't at school, after school he would come and work at this hardware store with his dad, and that hardware store became a central piece in their life because family owned, all the family got to be a part of it. He said the greatest thing really about that hardware store, Jimmy says, is not so much as that our life revolved around it, but our dad was at the center of it. Jimmy grew up in a pretty good home where he was loved, where he was encouraged, and where he was disciplined when needed be. And his dad, choking back tears, hands him this note as he's about to send his son off to war. And this is what it says: "Soon after you read this letter, you will be on your way to the worst sort of danger. But Jim, I am banking on the enclosed copy of the 91st Psalm. The thing that takes the place of fear and worry is the promise of these words. I am staking my faith in these words. I feel sure that God will lead you through this mad experience. I can say no more. I continue only to pray. Goodbye, my dear. God bless you and keep you. I love you more than I can tell you." Jimmy went off to war, knowing that God was putting him in his hands. I'm not going to read Psalm 91. I'll let you look at that later. Jimmy comes back. Jimmy comes back and lives to be an old man. And during those years, he became actually quite well known as he became an actor. He was in Westerns and all kinds of movies, even Christmas movies, one of my favorite, It's a Wonderful Life. Jimmy Stewart had a dad who, when it came time to let him go, put him into the hands of his father. So as parents, here's maybe what we do. Like Jacob, we keep seeking the compassion of the Almighty. Holding on to our faith and to His promises, even in the midst of your sadness. Secondly, you do what you can and what you should do in your situation. Not all of us always do what we should do, because it takes courage to do what we should. And each of our situations are different. They are unique. Sometimes there's some common things that run through them. But each of your situations is a little different. So may you do what you can and what you should do. Remember this, your kids, even your adult ones, will make their own choices. And we have to sometimes let consequences be the teacher. I've watched too many parents continue to bail out and enable their kids, even into adulthood, where it has become detrimental to them and those around them. And then fourth, remember, God is a better father than you are. He's a better parent. Learn from that. Learn how He's dealt with you. Learn what He tells us in His Word and emulate that. Follow that example. But what if we're not parents? How all does this relate? Well, like Jacob, keep seeking the compassion of the Almighty, holding on to your faith and His promises in your situation, whatever that may be. You do what you can and what you should in your situation. And remember this, people will make their own choices, decisions that you cannot control. And this one, you just learn to keep putting the situation into God's hands. Maybe you're here. Maybe somebody's listening online. And you're that one that these parents are worried about. I want you to know these things. You are loved. Tears have been shed over you. Your name has been brought before the Almighty over and over again to watch over you and to protect you, to guide you and to guard you. And remember this, God loves you. And He's waiting. Just like He waited for the prodigal to come to his senses, He waits for you. As we close out this morning, whatever your scenario and situation is, take it to God. Take the situation to God. Take them before God. Take yourself before God. And we're going to spend a few moments just silent prayer. And I'll close this out. Father, I pray over these people today. Because I know, just sitting right out here, are parents who are in the midst of that sadness. They have worried. They have cried. They have prayed. And it is my prayer that they put those children into your hands. Lord, I thank you for some of these people because they've been that child and you have rescued them out of it. And they have that in their story. Father, I know some in here are dealing with some difficult situations. It doesn't involve kids. It may involve somebody else. It may involve a relationship with somebody else or something that they've done and they're wrestling with just with you. Lord, may you give them the courage to do what they can and they should. And Lord, maybe somebody is just listening in right now, and they're that person that's kind of been wandering off. May your spirit just convict, and may your love envelop them, reminding them how much they are loved. Father, this is why Jesus has come. And now, whatever those situations are, we come and we put them into your hands. And we will probably have to turn right around and do that again tomorrow. And I pray over them in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Hey church, we're so glad you tuned in today. If you need prayer or have questions about this week's message or what it means to follow Jesus, you can message us on Facebook or visit our contact page on our website at whackonline.org. If you're interested in joining our church family, we have the next steps available for you on our website as well. Remember, we are real people experiencing real grace. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.